Good morning and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most vital segment of our society. To those of you like me who know that there's something troubling, even destructive, dreadfully wrong about the religion and politics, media reporting, military invasion, and jaundiced economic schemes. We realize that the institutions that claim to be the solution are actually the problem. So instead of trying to rearrange the color of the deck chairs on our sinking Titanic of state, our mission will be to scour the news so that we understand who is causing the tragedies that are besieging our planet. And while doing so, predicting how these events will influence our world. In our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the only glimmer of hope in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, anytime over the next 2 hours, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. Kind of a bittersweet day today. I just received news literally a moment ago that Scott, our beloved program director and co-host of the program, switchboard operator, the voice you hear when you do call into the program, and frequent participant in this program, is getting a promotion, moving upstairs, is going to have the opportunity to work in sales on behalf of GCN. So while Scott will be dearly missed as part of this program, we're happy that he has this opportunity, sales, and having a commission-based financial status is a scary thing for most, but it is also a wonderful opportunity to engage in business as it was meant to be and make things happen.
And I'll probably still call into the show every now and then, and also any holidays. So
okay.
I'll be your holiday.
Not to be a holiday guy, because we don't do the standard holiday palette, seeking instead to disregard the pagan traditions of Babylon. So that'll be great, Scott. And you are always welcome here. We'll be sorely missed as a tremendous voice of reason, and your insights, your personality and character, all of those things have made this show fun to do over the last year plus. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm really going to miss it. So.
Yeah, that's what you said this morning, that this was the kind of the only part of the reluctance of for you moving upstairs and something that you were asked or given the opportunity to do here in most...
Yeah.
Recent meetings with the management of Genesis Communication Network, and that your only reluctance in doing so was not being part of this program on a daily basis. So appreciate that as well.
It was, and it is. It still is. I mean,
yeah.
So I'll miss you.
Yeah, you're clearly loved by our listeners. I received emails every week of people complimenting you both on your insights and character and personality. Turning to the news this morning, the United States evidently thinks that it is the world's military, that it is the world's police. Since we couldn't bomb, Obama so desperately wanted to start another war and bomb Syria. You know, he got his jollies bombing Libya, turning Libya from a secular dictatorship into a jihadist state. So, now he wanted to go play in Syria, but Putin outmaneuvered him and thwarted the start of World War III by getting the Syrians to give up their chemical weapons stash, as opposed to us causing him to deploy it by having bombed him. So with him thwarted in that regard, while he still gets his jollies using his drones to go kill people without due process around the world, this president decided he would play cowboy, and he sent American troops to raid two different countries. One was raiding Somalia, and the other was Libya. And the excuse that was given was the Nairobi marketplace raid by Al-Shabaab, the Islamic group that controls much of Somalia, as if the United States was responsible for holding Al-Shabaab accountable for an act that it perpetrated in another state. But nonetheless, Secretary of State of the United States, Kerry, made the statement that demonstrates that we will hunt down and find Al-Qaeda wherever they are. They cannot hide, and that we will always respond to terrorism. Of course, that's not true. For the most part, Al-Qaeda has very little to do with terrorism perpetrated worldwide, and the United States turns a blind eye to most terrorism because most terrorism is perpetrated by allies of the United States as opposed to foes. And even as it relates to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, which we are fighting Afghanistan, the United States was their primary backer for many years. The response, of course, in Somalia and in Libya is those countries are enraged. It's just like Pakistan when we continue to send our drones over Pakistan and when we sent in troops to kill bin Laden. We in America have become so egomaniacal and so belligerent with our use of our military that we do not respect international law. We think that America can enter any country for any reason to do anything that the leaders of this nation want. It is interesting that the fellow that was snatched in Tripoli, who was known as Abu Anas al-Libi, his name, as I understand it, is Na'i al-Rahi, that he is alleged to have been responsible for the Kenya bombings many years ago, about way back, I believe, during the Clinton administration, and that he is now integrated into the Libyan government. You know, when America bombed Muammar Gaddafi's military and deposed the secular dictators, even though he was a syphilitic and a horrible human being, we ended up having a jihadist state in Libya, of which Al-Shabaab's leader there was integrated within the militias and integrated within the government. We also allegedly captured some individuals that may have been involved in the Al-Shabaab attack in the marketplace in Nairobi, although it is always questionable as to what we achieve because America has a selective sense of disclosure. The most important evidence is usually withheld. That which is released is often errant. For example, the New York Times and NBC both reported that the Al-Shabaab leader had been captured in Somalia, but the Times then said it was believed that he had been killed in a pre-dawn fight and the U.S. troops were forced to withdraw before that could even be confirmed. However, the Associated Press news agency quoted unknown sources as saying that the SEALs failed to find their intended target. The Rahway raid was planned a week and a half ago, U.S. security officials told the New York Times. It was prompted by the Westgate attack. That was the shopping mall in Nairobi, Kenya. And when you recognize that, then the United States has become blatant in its desire to play policeman for the world. It is a role that the United States cannot afford to play. We are bankrupt. It is a role that makes us far more enemies than it does friends. It is a role that puts us outside of our constitutional jurisdiction where we typically, without due process, go in and kill people like we did with bin Laden as opposed to bringing them to trial. It is a dangerous precedent. It guts the United States, puts the United States in harm's way and our sons and daughters in harm's way in places where we do not have an ally, where there is nothing that can be achieved that is beneficial. In countries like Somalia, like the Sudan, like Libya, like Egypt, like Syria, like Afghanistan, like Pakistan, like Iraq, like Iran, there is absolutely nothing that can be achieved that is beneficial. Islam has so corrupted and polluted those countries, and it is so entrenched within those countries, that there is absolutely nothing a rational and informed individual can do to make the situation better. And if the only option is to make a bad situation worse, then one ought not engage. Speaking of bad situations, over the weekend, at least 50-some-odd people were killed in clashes in Egyptian cities. The opponents of the new military junta marched in parades, not only in support of ousted Muslim Brotherhood leader Mohamed Morsi, the democratically elected president of Egypt, but they also marched in great parades to celebrate the anniversary of the 1973 Yom Kippur attack on Israel, where Syria, Egypt, and other Islamic countries in unison decided to attack Israel on the most religious day in the rabbinical Jewish calendar. Yom Kippurim is a very important day on Yahweh's calendar, but not the way that it is celebrated by Jews who fast on this day. And so here in Egypt, the military junta was flying its Apache helicopters, its American fighters, driving its American tanks in parades to celebrate its participation in the Yom Kippur War that nearly destroyed Israel because of the surprise attack and the overwhelming superiority of the Islamic weaponry that was brought to bear against Israel. But they failed. And yet that was what the government military junta was celebrating, while they were also celebrating the democratically elected leader, Mohamed Morsi. The government, however, having all of their war apparatus on display to celebrate the anniversary of the Yom Kippur War against Israel, decided to turn it on their own citizens, killing over 50 as a result. This is a mess we have made. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Mess. We're covering the news and considering what a horrible mess that we have made. We made a mess in Tunisia where jihadists now that are wanted for heinous acts around the world are part of the government that we made possible because we chose to bomb that country. It's the exact same thing that would happen if America had done what America's leaders wanted to do and begun bombing Syria. We would have had exactly the same disaster on our hands, which would have made Syria a jihadist state. Afghanistan will be an jihadist state the moment America withdraws. It is all but that now. Iraq now is a nation in the broken in the midst of a civil war, directly as a result of what America has done. And Egypt has turned into just this bloody mass of a broken state, broken economically, broken militarily, broken politically, and of course broken to the point where the fundamentalist Muslims and the less fundamentalist Muslims are waging war at not only against each other, but both annihilating the Christians. Well, speaking of one of the countries that America broke but doesn't seem to have any interest in dealing with the terrorists there, I don't know why Secretary of State Kerry would make the claim that we will never stop until the perpetrators of terror are held accountable. Two suicide bombers targeted Shiite Muslims in Iraq on Saturday, killing 60 people on the anniversary of one of their imams' death. The northern city of Mosul, unidentified gunmen also shot two Iraqi television journalists as they were filming the story. No group has claimed responsibility, and it's stunning that journalists still write such things, that no group has claimed responsibility. And then, of course, they go to immediately say that such attacks are the hallmark of Sunni Islamist al-Qaeda. There is really no al-Qaeda in Iraq. Never has been. There was absolutely no al-Qaeda presence in Iraq when America invaded Iraq, claiming that we had to go into Iraq to attack al-Qaeda there. Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were arch enemies. Al-Qaeda wanted to invade Iraq because Saddam Hussein was a secularist, and he had advanced on Kuwait and was about to advance on Saudi Arabia, where Mohammed conceived the ungodly religious and political mantra of Islam. And so since America had equipped al-Qaeda to defeat the Russian-backed government in Afghanistan, they felt fully prepared to defeat Saddam Hussein. They were absolute enemies. As a result of America's invasion of Iraq, however, we inspired terrorism there. Terrorism increased thousands of percent as a result of America's invasion. And today, there is terrorist attacks almost on a daily basis between Sunni and Shia Muslims, as that nation is embroiled in a civil war that America made possible. It is a civil war, of course, that spilled out into Syria, making the Syrian civil war America's fault. In Baghdad, a suicide bomber detonated his explosives at a checkpoint, killing 48 Shiite pilgrims on their way to visit a shrine. Earlier on the day, another suicide bomber blew himself up inside of a cafe in a mainly Shiite town of Balad. The cafe was targeted in an almost identical suicide bombing 40 days ago. If you were asking yourself what group perpetrated this, then you are either ignorant or irrational. Suicide bombings are the hallmark of Islam. Now, while there have been suicide bombings that are not Islamic, you have to go way back in history to witness them. The kamikaze raids on U.S. ships would be an example, but that really wasn't a terrorist act because that was military versus military. So it had no terrorist aspect to it at all. The only terrorism that was perpetrated in that war was by the United States when we firebombed German and Japanese cities, killing civilians. But for the last 40 to 50 years, we have moved from the majority of terrorist acts being perpetrated by Muslims to a virtual monopoly. Today it is about 99% and 100% of suicide bombings. So why do we have to ask what group committed this atrocity when the answer is always Islam? So we have Rod on the line calling in from Indiana regarding the situation in Syria. Hello, Rod. Welcome back to Shattering Myths.
Hi, Yada.
Hi, Rod. Go ahead.
Okay. I was discussing the Syrian situation with an engineer that works for the Air Force.
Uh-huh.
And he made the comment to me that the Russians and the Chinese provided a anti-ship missile that spins about 5 or 6 foot above the water, and it zigzags, and we have no way of detecting it, and we have no defense against it, and the Syrians have enough of these missiles to sink all of the 6th and the 9th fleet that's in the Mediterranean and the Persian Gulf, and that he said that if we did bomb them, that he would use these missiles against our boats, and we wouldn't have a 6th fleet, and he wouldn't have a 9th fleet anymore. So his opinion was that's what really deterred us. That was the only comment I wanted to make. But there's
Everything you said up to the his conclusion as to what deterred us is absolutely right. It's worse than that, however, and that is that the Russians, the Chinese, and the Iranians, and I'm sure other countries as well, have a torpedo, typically hydrogen peroxide powered, which means that they're they're very risky on the ship that is deploying them. But they're super fast. They travel as about as fast as anything can travel underwater, and they are they're designed to travel about 50 feet or so below the hull of aircraft carriers. And when they explode, they create an air bubble. The explosion creates an air bubble underneath the keel of the aircraft carrier. And it's 100% lethal. The keel of the carrier breaks, and the ship sinks in less than 60 seconds. We know that our aircraft carriers are absolutely, wholly, and completely obsolete as a result. If we were actually engaged in a war, our aircraft carriers would be nothing but floating coffins, and they wouldn't be floating coffins very long. It's just literally a matter of 30 to 60 seconds is how long they would survive. And so the combination of the circuitous flying, low-flying missiles, which we do have a bit of a defense for, so long as there's not a lot of them. The Aegis Gatling guns that we put on the decks of our warships are able to take out missiles. Typically, if they're flying in a straight path, it's much more difficult for us to take them out when they're very low to the surface and when they fly in a circuitous pattern. But so long as the number that are fired are, you know, less than 10 at any one time at a particular ship, our Gatling guns are decent at taking them out. But when there's lots of them, that is no longer the case. And the missiles are infinitely cheaper than warships. So America's Navy was built for conditions that no longer exist. It is now a gargantuan liability and is no longer an asset. And yet we continue to build submarines that have absolutely no purpose whatsoever. There's no value in our submarines, literally none. Our aircraft carriers give us the ability to protect a force which causes us to engage in wars we ought not be in. And they are now awesomely vulnerable. And the rest, serve as launch platforms for cruise missiles and other kinds of typically just trying to protect the aircraft carrier. So what you were told is accurate. It's worse than what you were told, of course. And America is absolutely just squandering every dollar it spends on its military. That's not why Obama elected not to bomb Syria. And it's sad because it was so obvious that if we bombed Syria, the consequence was going to be unbelievably grievous for everyone concerned. More Syrians would die. Assad would simply look at what happened to Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi, and he'd realize that once America dropped the first bomb, it would be over, and that he had the capacity that Muammar Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein didn't have. He had missiles with chemical weapons at the top of them, and he could have rained death upon not only Israel, but Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Turkey and Greece and in addition to right down on our warships as well. And the Russians and the Chinese own America. They are our financial backer. The moment that they decide they don't want to buy any more bonds, we are in a depression far worse than anything witnessed in 1929. And we would have had to have tried to bomb Syria over a Russian fleet and put ourselves in a position to ignite World War III. There was nothing to gain because the rebels that are fighting Assad are worse than Assad, far worse than Assad. That's saying something because Assad's a despicable human being. So it's just stunning that that megalomaniacs like Obama don't think it through. So I think the thing that stopped him was the fact that Americans, and this was so encouraging, Rod, is that Americans, for the first time maybe in the nation's history, spoke up and said, no, we're not going to rally around the flag.
I've been hearing a lot of people make comments about about their concerns about our use of the military around the world. That's something I never heard before, but that people are, they are talking about it.
I think that is just so awesomely encouraging, because if patriotism had always driven America to rally around the flag, even when we were doing things stupidly, like, you know, we lied about the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and Americans rallied around the president and the troops, and we sent 60,000 Americans to die in Vietnam, making a bad situation worse. We lied about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and we sent, you know, another 5,000 to 10,000 Americans to die in Iraq and Afghanistan based on absolute lies. You know, and all we've done is make bad situations worse time after time and invaded countries based on lies. It's encouraging, finally, that America gets it and says, you know, we ought not be supporting this kind of stuff. I don't think I've ever been more encouraged in terms of the awakening of a nation as I was by the response to Syria. So we're on the same page. At least I hope we're on the same page here, Rod. I assume that we are, that this was, you viewed, America's reluctance to go in is a good thing. And it's just the only point where we disagree, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just disagreeing with the engineer speaking on behalf of the U.S. military is why we didn't actually bomb Syria. The president wanted to bomb Syria desperately because he wants to be seen as the Sunni messiah. The reason we didn't bomb Syria is that the Russians didn't want World War III, and Putin pulled a rabbit out of the hat and came up with a perfect solution to the problem of chemical weapons. And the reality is, it is stunningly unlikely that the Syrians deployed the Syrian government deployed those chemical weapons. And even if they had, they were not deployed by Assad, which means we had no justification for bombing. And I say the only reason we didn't bomb is that Obama was trumped by Putin. It's hard to, I mean, I really can't stand Putin. I think he is one of the most evil people in the world today. But it is stunning when he makes more sense, is more rational, more moral, peace and inducing than the President of the United States. We have fallen a long way for a man that's despicable to be that much superior than our leaders.
I was listening to a YouTube documentary by the British Broadcasting System on the history of Syria past weekend, and it really struck me just how fortunate we as a country are to be located somewhere other than Asia, Southeastern Asia, the Middle East for years.
Nice
if we could, like, move our country to the moon or Mars or to another solar system. That whole area of the world's a mess.
Yeah, and you'd have to say, what is the common denominator? And every Middle Eastern nation from Northwest Africa all the way to Pakistan, up to the Caucasus regions with all of the stands, right down to the Somalia and the Sudan and Yemen and Saudi Arabia. What is the one common denominator? Why can't we just? I mean, okay, it would take 50 hours for somebody to read Prophet of Doom and to be fully appraised on the words and deeds of Muhammad and the Islamic scriptures to know that Islam is a declaration of war against all humankind, that it's a terrorist manifesto. But if you didn't want to invest the 50 hours to read it, then...
Look at history.
Look at history. And read your current newspaper. I mean, virtually every day that I get up, 5-something in the morning, and I come in and I read the news to prepare for the first hour of this program, typically, half or more of the lead stories in every news agency in the world is the malfeasance and the deadly and destructive nature of Islam.
And I didn't really realize until I started listening to you and then doing a little bit of thinking that Islam has affected world history for over 1,000 years.
Yes.
And that's something that isn't really, they don't explain to you in the history books.
Right.
But It really...
Yeah. Let me give you a great example. The President of the United States lied when he said that the United States has never been at war with Islam. The first war that America fought as a young nation, right after our Declaration of Independence, our first war was not against the British, the War of 1812.
Yeah.
That was not our first war. Our first war was against Islam. Our first American attempt at a navy was routinely sabotaged and kidnapped and fleeced, if you will, robbed by Muslim pirates off of the Moroccan coast. And so Jefferson, when they confiscated a ship and held the crew hostage and stole everything aboard, Jefferson authorized a raid that freed the American crew. It was the first act of war that America engaged in, and it was directly against Islam. Later, he would go and visit with the viceroy of the Ottoman Empire, asking him why they were attacking American ships, and he quoted from the Quran and the Hadith, which is why Jefferson had a copy of the Quran in his possession, because he was blown away that religion could be that bad. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We read from Reuters that Republican House Speaker John Boehner vowed on Sunday not to raise the U.S. debt ceiling without a serious conversation about what is driving the debt, while Democrats said it was irresponsible and reckless to raise the possibility of a U.S. default. The quote reads from Boehner, "The nation's credit is at risk because of the administration's refusal to sit down and have a conversation," Boehner told ABC's This Week, adding that there was not enough votes in the House of Representatives to pass a quote-unquote clean debt bill without any conditions attached. Asked if that meant the United States was headed towards a default if President Obama did not negotiate ahead of the October 17th deadline to raise the debt ceiling, Boehner said that is the path we are on. Republicans and Democrats also traded blame for a shutdown that has brought much of the government to a standstill for nearly a week. With no end in sight, the battle over funding the government has merged into one over the debt ceiling. Republicans have demanded that Democrats agree to delay implementation of the misnamed Affordable Care Act, the landmark 2010 law, popularly known as Obamacare. They have also been seeking measures to address the federal government's long-term debt in exchange for raising its nearly $17 trillion debt limit. If borrowing cap is not increased, the United States would default. A quote from Bonner, "I do not want the U.S. to default on its debt, but I'm not going to raise the debt limit without serious conversations about dealing with the problems that have been causing this to occur. It would be irresponsible to do so." So that you know, in 1980, America made the transition from our debt problem being a problem of billions to it being a problem of a trillion. By 1985, the aggregate debt of the United States was $1.5 trillion. 5 years later, in 1990, it was $3 trillion. By 1995, that grew from $3 trillion to $5 trillion. At that time, Newt Gingrich came up with the idea of a contract with America. And he did everything up to the point of getting his balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution. But he made a tremendous difference and the attitude towards spending, and that came off the Reagan years where Reagan applied the Laffer curve, which says that lower rates end up with increased revenues because of an expanding economy. That combination kept the deficit from 1995 to 2001 at $5 trillion. It did not grow. In 2005, however, the aggregate debt of the United States was now at $8 trillion. In business, we have a term called the hockey stick. Anytime you see, you know, a hockey stick, it's the blade of the hockey stick starts off at about 2 inches high, and by the time that you reach the shaft of the hockey stick, it's about 4 inches high. And so there's a gradual incline, and then once you hit the actual shaft of the hockey stick, rather than going straight up, it goes off at a little steeper than a 45 degree angle. And so in business, we talk about a trend where either spending or debt or some or sales, revenue, could be anything, is a hockey stick if it has been gradually increasing over a period of time at a fairly steady rate, and then at a point begins to turn upward and that rate begins to increase geometrically. America's debt is a demonstration of a hockey stick. So in 2000, it was $5 trillion. In 2005, it was $8 trillion. 5 years later, in 2010, it was $14 trillion. Fiscal 2013, the total debt is expected to exceed $17.5 trillion. We will soon be at $20 trillion, probably before the Obama second term is over. We will have gone from 1980 at less than a trillion to over $20 trillion by 2016. So Obama said, stop a vote, stop, take a vote, stop this farce, and end the government shutdown right now. In complete and utter denial of the fact that there is a balance of power that was conceived in the U.S. Constitution, he is not a dictator, and the farce is our unwillingness to deal with the debt that we are drowning in. Shattering This will continue after the news.